You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
Celtic had the chance to go back to the top of the table this weekend, but Jai Beaton, care of the Crown Bar Bells Hill, was having none of it. Were Celtic beaten fair and square on the day, or did we see some VAR wizardry that made sure the 3 points were out of reach at Tynecastle? We'll discuss all of this and much more on tonight's Celtic Exchange Weekly. This is Tino, and tonight I'm joined by a full house of Miff, Paddy and James. James, you've been away for a couple of weeks, nice tan on the go there. What's been your summary of everything that's been going on?
Jeez, a lot to cover, eh? Just 2 weeks, you know, form starting to pick up. Rangers dropping points, us not taking advantage, Mark Law leaving, Rangers beating all over the place with VAR, just an interesting couple of weeks. So, I mean, if you want to look at the Mark Law stuff first, it's a funny one. So I think he's obviously not delivered on the job that he was there to do. That's plain for all to see. The stats are all there in terms of the number of players that are playing that he's signed. James Forrest has played more games than most of the signings from the summer, for example, this season. So, you know, that's not been a performance that should sustain any role. But my overall feeling on it is, what were the restrictions put on Mark Law in terms of doing his role? If he was sent out to find guys between $3,000 and $5,000 a week for less than £3 million that we can hopefully develop and sell on for 10, 15, 20 million. You know, you're looking at a badder going for 10 million, you know, this week, signed for two or three. That's the Celtic model writ large. And when it works, it's great. But it's a numbers game. You know, a lot of those development players won't work out. And that criteria will hamstring you if that's your only criteria. If you say, go and get me four of those and get me three of those, which is senior, experienced, you know, £10 million, £7 million, whatever it may be, I don't think he was given that criteria, so he was set up to fail. I know this is very soft compared to a lot of the kind of fans' views, and you know, a lot of things I've been saying all season in terms of criticising him, but if you actually look beyond his role, he's been dealt a bad hand.
I think what you'd have to look at overall is if the strategy's not right, it doesn't matter if it's Mark Lowell or insert the best recruitment guy in the world here, because if you're working in certain parameters that don't allow you to operate, then how can you succeed?
This is the salient point. So Celtic think, right, lightning rod, he can take all the snash kind of thing, get him out, bring somebody else in, give him the same criteria. That's just not going to work. I mean, I don't think Mark Law, who will obviously be a Celtic fan, came here for all this grief. You know, he's like, I'm a football professional, you know, I've got experience. He wasn't experienced to the level to get that job, but he had football experience.
We had the chat a few weeks ago, I think Paddy and I spoke about it in one of the pre or post matches recently. We all accepted that something had to give. Somebody had to take the fall for that. Not just the most recent transfer window, the last few. And I think you make the fair point. It's not just one guy that can, you know, be at fault there, but it's Mark Lowell that loses out on this occasion. Miff, just to go back to some of the stuff from Tynecastle, and we're going to get into in a bit more detail. You've bounced in here the night. Rodgers out.
What's your general? That's just my set stance. Definitely the victim of circumstance. Still doesn't forgive the fact we've not scored our penalty. So it's a different game if you score a goal, as we all know. it's directly the passage of play after that that's led to the sending off. Sending off is subjective, but I think it's very naive play from Yang, if I'm being honest. He knows the challenge is coming in. He's put his foot up high. Probably doesn't need to do it, but
it's a booking.
Again, there's no intent there. Definitely no intent. And the penalty against us is just an absolute shambles. Because what's not taken into account is the fact that two players have actually knocked Iwata forward. That's why his arm comes out, is because he's actually bumped in midair.
Yeah.
He's made no attempt to actually play the ball. So for me, as you suspect happens in these situations, when there is a subjective call to be made, we are on the rough end of the stick.
I done the post match with Bridal yesterday, and he was saying footballers, it's not table football. You can't just stay like this and spin around on the axis. You need to move. Guys need to get about
If anybody pushes anyone, your arms go up.
There was a very similar passage of play. Just in the Motherwell game, where the ball hit up off Casey's arm, and Casey's arm was like that, but he was going in to make a tackle. It was really close range. The ball came up and came off him. Didn't even get it viewed. I think it got reviewed for a millisecond, because Colin Wave play on almost immediately. For me, in my opinion of the flow of a game of football, that's far more a handball, because he's facing play and he stopped it directly going into goal. Iwata's coming away from his own goal right at the edge of the box when the ball's dropping down out of there, when he's back to the ball. It's just never ever a penalty.
What seems so clear is what isn't deemed a handball isn't based on the rules, Paddy. It's based on who the ref is on any given weekend.
Well, that seems to be the case. I think we're absolutely right to feel aggrieved at the decision. And, you know, I just find it really, really interesting. A weekend where Infantino was in Scotland for a meeting to discuss, you know, a whole range of rules, especially considering the workaround with VAR at the moment. It's not great. It's not been brilliant for Scottish football. I do feel that it has been on the mend a little bit lately. It's been less farcical. And then you have the game yesterday. I do think that the decisions were all incorrect, except sound very biased, but except for their penalty. I think that's a stonewaller in my opinion. But for me, it's the consistency, because we've kind of spoke about those kind of penalties being given in the past, those handballs being given in the past. They have brought up a lot of debate. You know, is the hand in an unnatural position? It is in an unnatural position if it's going to be on the basis that they are setting out to like make themselves bigger. But as the guys have said, he's been bumped into it. It's moved him away from his natural position, and he's just ended up, the ball's hit off him. He's not hit the ball. It's a crazy, crazy decision.
A term like unnatural position, though, doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the referees, first and foremost. You know, that your natural arm position when you're standing at a bus stop is completely different when you're in an active sport like football, where you need to get motoring and move around. There's just that term is so fluffy that anyone can, you know, interpret in whatever way they want. I'm going to come away for that briefly. We'll come back to it in a wee bit more detail. We'll hear from Brendan Rodgers. Not that he's here, but we've got some audio
from him. Special guest.
That would have been awkward.
Hello, Mr. Rodgers. I'm a big fan of your work. But I'll ask you a question. So a fella called Mark Dornan, good friend of the show, got in touch last night, based on the back of the result, to ask the question. And I think he's maybe in your camp, Miff, with regards to Rodgers. But to ask the question, if Celtic do manage to win this title, would they quote unquote deserve it? What's your take on that, James?
The team with the most points at the end of the season would deserve to win the league's a league. You know, that's true across the world. 100%, and it'll be one of the best titles we've ever won in my lifetime if we get there. So absolutely. And it's great. Imagine what you would look like this season if you'd actually backed Rodgers properly. It's ridiculous. You know, just 100% we deserve it.
Yeah. My response was pretty close to that, in terms of you can fluke cup competitions sometimes. You can get a lucky draw, all of a sudden you're in a final and you can win it in penalties. But over a 30-game league campaign, Paddy, even if you're, you know, toe-to-toe with your opponent, we both drop points at the weekend, for example. By the end of the day, after 38 games, if you've got one point or one goal more than them, you do deserve it, don't you?
You do, absolutely. And I think, listen, the narrative is in Rangers' favour of late. Until that weekend there, I think it's two weak sides. I really do. I think both sides are there to be got at. And I tell you what, if we're going into this run-in now, the way the teams that are going to be in the top six will be thinking, hang on, let's see what we can get against these guys.
Most of them have taken points off of both of us through the season.
Aye, yeah. Celtic Park, Ibrox or at home. I think that it's up there. Now, that's not good enough for us. That's where the little bit of anger comes from Celtic fans. But as I've touched upon many a time this season, this has been a very, very unique year in terms of A, that summer transfer window was an absolute riot. But B, we've been dealing with such an inconsistent starting 11 and injuries that have really affected big players for us. We see the difference Cameron Carter-Vickers has made to this side since he's come back in. And I think we'd pretty much say the same if we get an up and running fit Rio Hatate coming back into the side. The boost of energy that would give that 11 as well. It goes to the 38 games. We will analyse this season and say it's not been our best. But they can't turn around. No one else can turn around and say that they've been better than us if we win the league.
Yeah. 100%, that's got to be the response. And I think you can certainly see that both Celtic and Rangers, they're vulnerable. They're there to be got at, you know, both sides. And it's just the least vulnerable will win the league. That's the way it's going to play out. You've also got the fact that, you know, you've talked about, you know, summer and what went on there. This is a season of transition all of a sudden, losing Ange, losing some key players. But I don't think it's even a debate. We've transitioned down the way, if that's the right way to word that. Tell you what, before we kick on with the rest of the show, here's a quick update on what additional episodes we're going with across this week on the Celtic Exchange. Monday today, we've released The Battle to Save Celtic. Today, Miff, today, 4th of March, it's 30 years to the day from Fergus McCann's takeover. Memorable times for you then?
Yes, very much so. The promise of a brighter future after a really, really poor few years. Which actually coincided with me just starting to go to the games myself. So there were some grim times. Yeah. I think the first game I was able to go to on my own, 91, was a 0-0 draw. I was in the jungle, 0-0 draw at home to Partick Thistle.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come back to you and James as the older heads for some memories of 94, but we'll get to that. So as part one of the season, I spoke to Matt McGlone from Celtics for Change. Most Celtic fans will be aware of Matt, so you can hear that right now across the podcast channels and on YouTube. On Wednesday, we'll have the latest episode in our CSC story series. I got that all wrong name in that, James, because that is a nightmare for me to read that out.
Say it quickly. Six slices of square sausage.
The CSC story series, that continues on Wednesday with the boys at the Court Number 1 CSC. On Friday, we'll have the countdown to kick-off ahead of the Livy game on Sunday in the Scottish Cup. And of course, then on Sunday, after the game, we'll have the final whistle show. If you aren't already following us or subscribing to us on the likes of YouTube, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, then do so right now to ensure you don't miss an episode. Okay, before we hear what you lads think of John Beaton and co from Tynecastle, let's hear what the manager had to say after the game.
My feeling is the game is decided by the officials on the field and outside of the field. And you guys will know me long enough and around enough to know that I don't really comment on officials, and I know they make mistakes and whatever else. But today that felt was really, really poor officiating. For John Beaton to actually look at that in VAR, supposedly under no pressure, and to say that was a sending off, I find it incredible. And then the second one's worse. So to have a penalty go against you for that, then there'll be penalties every single weekend, midweek. I don't know what you're supposed to do. VAR is not the problem here. I think that's what's clear. It's competence, you know. And I think the first one is a great example of the game being refereed outside of the pitch. The referee made the decision, and someone outside made another decision to say it was a sending off. So that's the game being refereed outside of the field. And in big games, that costs you. That today was awful officiating. And what was a big game for us?
Miff, Brendan Rodgers is now set to be charged by the SFA. I believe they released a statement tonight, which I've not Celtic read through just yet.
Not the SFA, Celtic have.
The SFA have also. Yeah. Miff, is Brendan Rodgers right to call it out?
Yes. Yes, he's right. I think it's a mixture of a couple of things. He's trying to protect his players, trying to protect himself. Competency works both ways. We had a chance to score for 12 yards, didn't take it. That changes the complexion of the game. Next passage of play is a passage of play from which Yang sent off. It's a poor ball from Vickers out to Yang in the first place, and that's what puts him in trouble. So competency works from the players accepting their role and what they're doing in the pitch as well. However, we, as has happened a few times, and certainly that's probably the third, maybe even fourth handball decision we've had against us. That is really, really questionable. That just quite simply aren't getting given against other teams. And I'm not just saying that about Rangers. I'm saying that about any other handball. You know, reference to kind of Dan Casey one for part of the week before. So yeah, for me, I think he's right, because I also think the groundswell of fan opinion was one of we as in the club, as a collective, need to do something about it. And Roger's words and the fact that Celtic were appealing the red card were met with overwhelmingly positive reactions from most of my friends and you know, kind of people that I know. So that would suggest to me that in the eyes of the fans, Rodgers is in the right. And I think, as has been shown, you know, across the city, Rangers have absolutely no issue with approaching referees to get them removed for games if they feel they've had a poor game against them. So there seems to have been certainly a lot of influence for the VAR official in this particular instance, when the referee's been standing a matter of yards away for an instant, seen it one way, watched it back in a replay at the beckoning of another official, and then changed his mind. You can only imagine, take away Celtic being the team in that, you can only imagine how massively frustrating that must be when you're in a pressurised situation. Timing's everything as well. The timing of losing that goal to go in 1-0 down just right before half time is an absolute killer. So because Celtic were fairly comfortable in the game, it was just a really scrappy passage of play that led to that. So for me, I completely understand the frustration, and I think it's the right thing to speak out, but it would be remiss of me just to walk past, you know, the role that we've also played in our own downfall as well.
Okay, and that's fair enough. I think, though, just to stay on the point of Rodgers and if he's right or not, I think as a fan, you always want your club, and maybe more specifically your manager as the figurehead for the club, to be kind of fighting your corner. He's saying what we're all thinking, and I'm okay with that, and now the SFL come down on him, and I don't know if he gets a fine or a touchline ban or whatever happens, but that's just the way it works up here. Paddy, you might have seen, just to follow on from Miff's point, you might have seen a tweet that Lint put out this afternoon, you know, Lint on Twitter, who's always highlighting various things, and the tweet in terms of text says, the following video shows this, penalty, no penalty, blah, blah, blah. And then if you watch the video, you see what penalties are given for, i.e. yesterday, Tynecastle, and what's not getting given, Connor Goldson playing a handy ball in the box and all that kind of stuff. And it's just ludicrous when you watch it. These are just very recent examples, and you can say what you want, paranoid Tims and all that kind of stuff. It's right there in front of you.
Same,
you can
see it.
So if you've got a couple of eyes in your head, or even something next to you that can tell you what's going on, it's just quite apparent, Paddy. So from Roger's point of view, I suppose every situation where he's got an opportunity, he needs to turn it to his advantage. Do you think this is more fuel for the siege mentality that he's taken on board recently?
I think so. Like, I don't know about you guys, obviously it's a massive blow in terms of how important the game was yesterday to go and lose it. But my thought on it, my thinking for the rest of the season is still pretty much it's up to us. I've got a bit more belief in this squad. I think asking them to go and try and get a result yesterday with 10 men with 75 minutes plus to go is a big ask at a very hostile place, and yeah, really, really poor officiating. I take your point in terms of the penalty. Absolutely. There's only so much one player can do, and we should be scoring them. We should be scoring them. It's more than odds on favour for the player to score. It's how we react after that, and it's just such fine margins. I think for me, it's still, you know, I think you dust yourself down and just go on with a season after that yesterday. I really do, and I think as a support, we nearly need to be kind of looking at it. And yes, I think a manager has made the right stance in coming out against the SFA and saying what he said, but the team need that support for the remainder of this season. I actually thought we played some good football when we went down to 10 men as well. The goal, unfortunate, that was chopped off, I thought was some really, really nice football from us leading to that. And I tell you, if you get that, or if you get another chance, and we did have a few other chances, it's a harder game for Hearts. I think the pressure then goes on to them. We put ourselves under our own pressure yesterday for missing the penalty, though, definitely.
Yeah. And I think, though, bigger picture, we need to, you know, look at what's going on. And in terms of where we were on Friday, you're kind of as you were. You would be quite happy to come out of this weekend if nobody told you how it was all going to play out and still be 2 points behind. So I think we need to take stock of that, albeit it was frustrating, of course it was.
Well, I think that's where I've landed on it is, you're no worse off. You fully expected Rangers to beat Motherwell, and it was always a possibility you'd drop points at Tynecastle, maybe not get beat. So the fear was you might end up
behind.
Further behind because you'd went and drew the game. Fair enough. As soon as we had the man sent off yesterday, I'm thinking I'll take a point. Straight away, I'll take a point.
It doesn't really change anything. You know, it's good for your mentality.
That's where my head went, because I just went, I'll take a point here. Just the reason being, just how long there was left in the game.
Yeah.
It's all, Paddy, that's the point. You know, it's a long time to play with a man down.
Without our captain as well.
But I thought the application for a part of the game was actually quite decent. But fine margins, and that is it. It's fine margins. It's that control. And I think where we were, in terms of who we were playing and the reaction of the crowd and things like that, did play a massive part. And as it can often do in our favour, you know, when the roles are reversed. So you dust yourself down, you go on with it. You know, there's a league there to be won.
I don't think any team should overanalyse their squad when it's gone down to 10 men. You know, 59% of teams, when they go down to 10 men, lose the game. That's the stat on it.
That's a 42%
of all stats are made up on the spot.
Here's another 59%. 59 minutes is the average time when a sending off happens. So when you think about when our 16, sending off happens,
16 minutes.
Plus, there was so much injury time. Played pretty much 90 minutes with 10 men. Mm-hmm. And I thought Hearts played it very well. You were talking about with Brido, the way they switched, the way they stretched us, tired us. Our stats were almost like for like with Hearts yesterday, with 10 men for almost 90 minutes. I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. And they've just got to write it off as a bad day. Let the club do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Rodgers is taking his chance with speaking out, and he's backed the players and all that kind of stuff. So that'll come out when it comes. But I think Celtic are going to go into this properly lawyered up.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah, 100%.
I mean, I've definitely given the manager and the players a pass on yesterday, albeit I do agree with Miff. There's things we could have done better. They've apparently been won. Yeah, that's course. Something in your gift. But I think generally speaking, I'm happy to give them, you know, a pass for this one. I spoke to Des Roach. Don't know if you lads know Des. Des is a former Category 1 referee. He's doing some podcasts and stuff at this moment in time. And I asked him his opinion on the various different incidents at Tynecastle, and we're going to hear from him just in a second. But to ask you pointedly, James, and be careful, tread carefully how you answer, but based purely on the penalty, right, and, you know, the decision that not Don Robertson's come to, that John Beaton's come to, genuinely, do you see it as some form of cheating or just incompetency? And there's a fine line.
Let's kind of...
you might need to lawyer up after this.
I mean, my gut is aye, but it's cheating by subconscious bias. Right. If you put me in a crucial Celtic game or even a crucial Rangers game and a decision like that comes up and I'm Celtic daft, my subconscious can't stop my bias. That's you know, Alan Morrison's done some great work on it, great podcast with Graham Spears on it. Mm-hmm. You can't help yourself, it's just what it is. So you can take both the penalty and the sending off. The sending off is either careless, reckless, or excessive force. That's the three. Careless is nothing, reckless is a yellow, and excessive force is a red. You can't see that as excessive force. Cochrane's going into Yang rather than the other way around, so at best it's reckless. And I could see Gibbons a yellow, but I would take that, no problem. If you're seeing that as a red, it's because you want to see that as a red. Your subconscious bias is leading you to that, and it's the exact same as a penalty. We were told about a year and a half ago those penalties wouldn't be given anymore after Bernabe, the United, arm behind him, all that stuff. He said, oh no, we've got a grip on that, blah, blah, blah. It's the exact same reason he gave the penalty, because he wanted to see it as a penalty. Mm-hmm. So let's take cheating out of it, call it subconscious bias. It's the same result.
It's a beautiful diplomatic answer. I like it. No lawyers needed here. Maybe. Okay, I asked the very question today, so let's hear his response now.
Dead easy. It's never a penalty kick. Never a penalty kick. There was actually one, I think it was last season, was it Bernabe, left back at Celtic at the time? Exactly the same. He's went up for the header. The ball has dropped. The ball has hit him. The Hearts player's challenging. There's two Celtic players going for it. A Hearts player going for it. The ball then drops, goes out of play for a throw-in. Not one person in the ground was looking for that decision to be made. Not one.
Not one person. Except except the
and
man that's
JB in the caravan.
Except a guy who drinks in the Crown Bar.
JB from Belsall. So he was asking the question, Paddy. So just as we start to round up this particular section, your final thoughts on all of the above?
I think I think Rodgers coming out and having his say on it, and yeah, he might face some action from the SFA. this is the kind of stuff you just get your team riled up with. This is what we're up against. Maybe it is a bit of an underdog mentality, but it's not us against a club, it's us against a setup, if that's going to be the case, you know. And I think that we just need to be ready for it. It's, as I say, we're how many games left now? Nine?
Nine, yeah.
You know, and big games, it gets harder. It's going to get harder. We're hopeful that we're keeping in tone the Scottish Cup as well. I think you use that for momentum. I think you use that to try and get your team psyched up for the remainder of the season.
You also might use that to take Rodgers' ban.
Aye.
Is there any news on Hatate coming back? Just when you mentioned?
He said on Friday, I know you might be going on to this later on in the show, Kino, but I'll cover this section.
Who needs injuries
at Celtic. He said on Friday that he's hopeful that he's back training.
Back in the grass.
Before the international break. Fantastic. And then hopefully back
in then he'll go away with Japan, get injured, and come back.
No. He'll not be allowed to go with him. Well, after the last thing.
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Celtic's head of recruitment.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay, so as we all heard during the week, Mark Lowell has now resigned, quote-unquote resigned, as head of recruitment at Celtic. The debate will go on as to whether he was pushed, did he jump, but either way, he's no longer Celtic's head of recruitment. James, you gave your own thoughts there earlier in the piece. Smith, what's your own take on it at the moment?
Well, somebody was always going to need to carry the can, but James makes a valid point. If you're working under parameters where you're always trying to, you know, that golden project in, it's going to make you £8-9 million when you sell them, there's got to be a bit of turnover in that. But ultimately, the past two transfer windows have just been so poor. I think it was just a lack of activity in January. There was just so little.
Putting his stamp on things and saying, stop giving me rubbish.
Aye, and it was almost like that. The board acting surprised that we were so hostile towards it. You know, it seemed to get halfway through the month before they started, better chuck a few links out there, lads. Guys are getting a bit nervy out there. It's just January's a tough month for business. We're not going to do anything. So many times in my Celtic supporting career, we've been Celtic supporting life.
Who do you think you are?
I think it's in like a body job.
Is that your CV?
Aye, it feels like a job at times. We've just been a couple of players away from a cracking team.
Aye.
And I think I sat here and said that in the summer, very rarely do we put the foot down when we're on top, and we've done it again. We've done it again. And it's just, Lobel's only a cog in the overall machine. Mm-hmm. Do we have a desire to go and spend money to make the team better? And I just don't think we do. We just don't. You know, there's three positions that need filled. It'll cost money to do it. It's like anything else. If you're going to renovate your house, it'll cost you money to do it to make it look nicer. Just go and spend the money.
The pushback on that is that they did spend money in summer. They just spent it so poorly. They spent the best part of £20 million on nothing. Not a lot. See, that you've seen the first team.
£20 million, when you're sitting on assets that you can sell, isn't a huge amount.
And you've just got a jot of money on.
For a modern football club spending. League.
It's not nothing, and they could and should have spent it better. That's my
But it's been so thinly spread out as well.
We'd have all been happier with four players for that 20 rather than nine.
And Brendan Rodgers would have been happier because it's none of these.
How do we go from £2-3 million to, you know, 7-10 million? We're going to train guys for £2 million and sell them for 10. That's the target. Well, why not sign them for 8 and sell them for 30?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? The Abada example coming in, we'll talk about Abada in a minute, but you've signed him for 3.8. Something like
3.8 was
it? And you're nearly trailing your money, so you're good business here. But can you crank that up to the next level? So don't buy Abada, buy the guy who's currently above Abada and sell him for more than 10 million. Anyway, we'll get back to that just in a minute. I suppose I want to try and turn Mark Lobel's exit into a positive in the nicest way. So, first of all, Paddy, do you think we'll now see Celtic go into the market to recruit for that role and do it properly, in my opinion? You know, there's the various links and what is and isn't true about how he came into the club, and that's fine, that's now history. But what about what Celtic do next? Do we go and look for, to quote guys like Don Mackay and others, and find the best in class? There must be some guys out there that can do that role very effectively. So is there a real opportunity here for Celtic to get that key recruitment right?
There's a great opportunity for it. I think that I agree with James's point earlier on about that, you know, it's not just all on Mark Lovell, but I think that the quality of player that he was probably bringing to the table wasn't what we were looking for as well. And I think the fact that it was Rodgers that came out and said he brought in Ida as well, like, that's a massive statement of this hasn't worked. No, I don't feel confident that that position does get filled, because the transparency from the club to the fans in terms of, you know, what the vision is, what the future is, we got that all in a discussion from Don Mackay almost 3 years ago. There's been nothing since. There's been absolutely nothing since. And I think we are given the small statements here or there, just explaining who's arrived at the club, who's leaving the club, and we're not hearing much afterwards. We don't know what the vision is. We don't know if we're going to employ a director of football. We don't know if anyone's going to come in, and hopefully in the next few weeks, to replace Mark Lovell, considering we've got a summer window approaching as well. We don't know if there's going to be any changes at board level in terms of, you know, those that have been there for a long time and don't really seem to be doing much for the club at this point. There is no forward thinking, and they're not, again, talking to the fans about it. It's really concerning in my view on that. I think, I don't know what we're going to be looking to do. And the thing is, this is not the first time we've been speaking about this.
And as a bigger picture thing, Paddy, I think communication in general is one of your biggest bugbears, not just about what's happening with recruitment or bigger picture plans, stadium stuff, development, hotels, all the stuff that you hear about at different times randomly through a preferred journalist. When are the club going to come out and tell? You don't need to tell us the finer detail of the strategy. That'd be foolish, and no club would do that. But you can give us some headlines and things to get excited about. You see it from other forward-thinking clubs down south. I don't know if it's Brentford or Brighton just now that are the shining lights for that. Right. They're sharing with their fans the vision and getting fans excited about it. And I think, you know, if Celtic mapped out to say, where are we now, 2024, we're not going to be greatly successful in Europe next year or particularly year after, but we're working on something right now so that in 2, 3, 4 years, there's something that can be happening here. You know, just that kind of communication. No, you don't need the finer detail on how much you're going to spend and not spend, but things to get excited about, Matthew. You understand?
If they set themselves targets, then they make themselves targets. Mm-hmm. Because then if they don't hold it up, then we'll hold them accountable. That's why they don't set themselves targets. If they fail, they will be held accountable.
But this is the issue I'm talking about. It's 2024. Why have we got a business model like that? It's an absolute joke.
There's a business model where there is no accountability to both your points.
It's too comfortable.
Like, if we say that, then we'll be accountable for it. It's like, you should be accountable for it.
It's the risk-averse approach across the board. To be successful and to be hugely successful, you need to take risks. There's no guidebook to say, just take these wee non-risky steps and you will be European champions. It's not possible. You need to go and speculate and risk and sign some guys and go out your comfort zone and try things differently. There's all sorts of ways to do it, but the risk-averse feeling around the whole club, on and off the park, it filters through.
Well, you're no buying your way in a scarf that says strong balance sheet on it, eh? You know, at the end of the day, you're going there to watch a product on the park, and you could actually you could argue that it's actually, you know, poor management to have so much money swirling about when the team is in dire need of reinforcements. And it's not fair in the players who have been there for years. The likes of McGregor, even the likes of Taylor, to a degree Hart as well, his workload's probably been too much over the past season or so, when he's probably needed rested a few games. You know, Vickers keeps breaking down injured. It'd be nice to kind of rest him at times if he'd somebody competent to come in. But we've not reinforced the squad to allow us to do that. And that is negligence.
And I think in Peter Lawwell's chairman's statement, when they released the half-term accounts there just in the last week or two, he basically alluded to that. He said, we feel your frustration, you know, we all got that. And also, we kind of know we shouldn't have this much money. You know, they kind of lean towards the fact that this isn't right.
Imagine a club being nervy about putting out such an excellent set of accounts, because everybody's sitting like, yeah, dirty.
But that is the thing. We know guys were at the kind of shareholders meeting maybe about 4 or 5 months ago.
You kind of float in these circles.
I don't. I know people who do.
Got a bit of money in the club, lads.
They were kind of giving a bit of a, January's going to be cool, guys, calm down kind of thing. It's all going to be fine. Those guys are all business people. They all know that money is fuel. It's not to be stuck in the Scrooge McDuck vault and looked at. It's to be used and used properly and invested. It's, you know, that's why he was embarrassed. And I think he's answering not us, the general fans there, he's answering those senior business people, shareholders that have said, look, we know that that's wrong.
Yeah.
The biggest problem Celtic can make right now is to replace Mark Lawl. That is not the answer. The answer is the structure that Mark Lawl sits under. If we go and spin it around and say, there's a head of recruitment, I mean, it's a pretty perfunctory, you know, technical role. Do you know how to negotiate a deal? Do you know how to spot players? Do you know how to act on the manager's instructions for what he's looking for? So it's quite, you know, there's a technical brief, go and deliver on it. It's the strategy above that you're looking for, and that's really where we need to be. And if there's none of that, I'll not be back.
Lee Congerton's
seen that.
Leaving
he's
Atlanta.
Leaving Atlanta.
I thought you were waiting to dig him up on using the word perfunctory.
He was.
No, I'm just on board with James's use of English.
Well, here's a question, though, and I think, you know, in different ways we've all put a positive spin on it, but is it something, Mark Lawwell's appointment and now exit, is it something the club can learn from in terms of, or take steps to improve on that next time around? And I think you're right, though, but before you replace Mark Lawwell, you need to sit down and look at what the strategy is. Get clear with the manager on what he needs, because it just seems that there's a disconnect between what Brendan Rodgers required and what the club were willing to offer him. And that isn't Mark Lawwell's fault.
The biggest problem is if you're hiring anyone for any role, you need to know the way your company's going before you can hire them. Because otherwise, what you ask them to do, we don't know what we're doing as a company, you know, as a club. So how can we sell the role to someone and expect them to deliver on it when there isn't any even medium-term strategy? The strategy is only short-term. Do a wee bit of stuff in Europe. Stay ahead of Rangers. That's it. And that's just, you know, we're way past that.
I'd have to agree. And time will tell, but the mistakes of the last few windows could prove to be very costly. And I don't just mean in terms of players that you've wasted fees on and ongoing wages. There's guys picking up a lot of money at Celtic for doing next to nothing. But it's this 50, 60 million prize pot, Paddy, that awaits, you know, the winner of this season's Scottish Premiership in terms of the Champions League access. That is a really costly mistake for the club to be making, isn't it?
It's, again, just juggling and hoping that, you know, everything will be all right, because we've been the most successful team in the last 12 years. And I think that is, there's just no model in place to kind of take us to the next level. I think we've seen many teams probably on par with how much money we're bringing into this club, some even bringing in less, outweighing us in Europe quite a lot, like quite substantially. I watched Bodo Glimt the other week against Ajax, albeit Ajax went and took the victory, but they had to work for it. And again, a team that's model seems to be still successful for them. They're getting to the latter stages in European football, and they're not just there to make up the numbers. They took Ajax to extra time in the second leg. We're dreaming about that.
Yeah.
We're dreaming about that. Yeah. And we've been, you know, I go back to the point that our last knockout win in Europe was, what, 20 years ago? That's an absolute joke.
It's outrageous.
absolute joke.
I know sometimes you can make stats do all sorts of things for you and present them in a certain way.
That's black and white.
That is outrageous.
Aye. That's like something like, you know, Dundee United no winning a Scottish Cup tie for 20 years. You know, that kind of thing, if you want to kind of move it to different levels.
Motherwell, you know, no winning at Ibrox since 1997.
Exactly. But for a small club, you go, well, that's hard, you know. Aye. We shouldn't be with the money we've got. That we see in the 90s and all that stuff, and certainly you're doing the Sales for Change stuff, you kind of went, well, we are skint. That's all we can afford. That's kind of, you understand the parameters. We're not skint. We're very wealthy, and we're just not using it.
The line that's doing the rounds that
we don't know how to use it.
Spoke to a few folks about in terms of the Fergus McCann stuff in the 1990s. It was something along the lines of, having money doesn't guarantee success, but having no money guarantees no success. Yeah. But we've got money and loads of it. we're drowning in it, and that's the frustration, isn't it? It's not like we're living hand to mouth and month to month. We've got the dough there and we're just not spending it effectively. The other news that you'll have seen today, I'm sure, is that Leah Labada is set to sign for Charlotte FC in the MLS in a deal worth up to £10 million, and I was surprised by that, Miff. I thought it was going to be a tear up your contract, we'll agree to disagree and off you go for buttons. And it's the whole situation around Leah Labada is unfortunate. But you'd have to say, just in a purely business sense, it's a smart piece of work.
Well, it's a great deal for Celtic. It's a great deal for Leo Labada. So, yeah, best possible outcome is what I said earlier. And, yeah, there was never going to be an ending where he came back into the team and played, I don't think, just because the positions had become very entrenched. I think he was under a lot of pressure for back home, so staying at Celtic wasn't going to really be tenable for him. But I'm just glad it's been resolved to everybody's satisfaction.
Yeah, it's some big moments in a Celtic shirt, James, least of all against Rangers, some really big goals there, but it's the right move for all concerned. And as Miff says, it's best case scenario.
100%, you know, I was a fan of him all the way through, and, you know, circumstances are what they are. You know, I suppose in the last piece we've just gave the board an absolute shoo-in. They deserve all the credit in the world for how they've handled such a difficult situation here, sensitively for the player himself, knowing the pressure he was under back home, how he'd be feeling about it all. There's obviously parts of our sport, including myself, that are very pro-Palestine. That's very, very difficult for a club to manage that within with the player in that situation. To then manage that and not just say, look, we know there's no coming back here, so we'll just, you know, shake hands and walk away, or take some. And some media were pushing for it in Scotland. Oh, that'll be like a 2-3 million. You maybe get your money back kind of thing. So to go out and actually find the deal, and find the deal in one of the only places where the transfer window's still open, and a place that suits Abada, where you'll feel comfortable and you won't get any snatch from back home anymore. They've worked really, really hard to get that done, and they deserve all the credit in the world for it. So, you know, fair play to them on that.
Fair play to the club and the manager for how they've managed that. If only we could deal with incomings as well as outgoings. They've done pretty well there, and obviously off he moves, Paddy. Did you enjoy his time as a player? Take all politics out the situation. Did you enjoy what he brought in a Celtic shirt?
Yeah, I thought there was real promise of Lila Bada. I think what an incredible first season he had in terms of just popping up at the right time. I think
great leader of where he needed to be.
Aye. And I think Barisic will be happy to see the back of him. He was a big prospect for us, and it's actually one of the reasons why I think, you know, Celtic have been clever with this, in the sense of they have done everything as best as they can for that guy, and what he will be going through in his life. And listen, I generally think that's a guy that still wanted to play for Celtic, but probably looked at the bigger picture and thought, this is really going against me for the pressure he was under from back home. But I think Celtic have also said, we hear you, we're going to listen to that, keep yourself fit, but you won't be involved in the squads, but we're getting money for you.
Yeah.
I don't think it would never be 2 or 3 million. And I tell you, if we waited to the summer and this nonsense wasn't happening, I think we would have made more money on him. So I think, you know, good deal for all around. And I wish him all the best, I really do.
I think we all do. I think we all wish him all the best, and good luck to him out there in the MLS. Let's take a short break, and when we return, James will be bringing us this week's Mystery Celt. Welcome back, folks. James, we'll come to you in just a minute for this week's Mystery Celt, but before we do so, let's take a quick look at last week's Mystery Celt, provided by Paddy. Clue number one, I've played in Scotland, England, Italy and France. Clue number two, I scored twice on my Celtic debut. And clue number three, in 2009, I tried to buy Portsmouth. I've got it just on the buzzer, James. You were saying you've not got around to it yet? You've not listened?
About halfway through the show last week on my holidays. Tried to buy Portsmouth?
Maybe somebody with a bit of business savvy.
Swiss.
Aye. Yes. Very man.
Can't remember his name.
Albin Ayeti.
It's fine, I got it anyway.
Yeah.
Ramon Vega.
Vega.
You had it. I'll give you
it. Yep. Taking it.
So Ramon Vega, he arrived at Celtic in a 6-month loan deal for the second half of the 2000-2001 season. He got 2 goals in his debut against Aberdeen, claimed a treble for that season, and he's got 23 caps for Switzerland. And as I say, he's moved into, you know, business circles, and I think he's put himself forward for the FIFA presidency on a couple of occasions, although he's missed out at the moment. James, your own thoughts on Razor Ramon?
Interesting guy. I mean, he wasn't the best player in the world, but he certainly wasn't the worst. He had a decent career, decent CV, and he popped up at some important moments. So, and he always seemed a big likeable big guy for director of football.
Maybe. Hey, well, that's another show, we'll get to that. But yeah, it's clearly a guy who kind of sees his future in that side of the game. Miff, were you a fan of Ramon?
I thought he was a bit limited, but he'd done a great job for us when he was here, although I think he tried to kind of get himself a bumper contract towards it. You know, he scored a few goals and he tried to kind of play us off, but done well when he was here, and then, you know, come up, did a job, walked away with a treble. Happy days.
Can't argue with that. Okay, James, let's go for it with this week's Mystery Celt.
Thanks, Miff. always like a wee international caps clue first, because that tells you absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I have 18 caps for my country, 2 goals. Who am I?
Next clue.
Right, okay.
Who am I? That's it.
I made my senior debut in football for English club Rochdale.
Gary Hooper.
I was going to say Hooper.
No.
No, he's not. No. Caps. Caps. No.
Gordon Strachan signed me for Celtic in 2008.
Paul Telfer? No.
2008.
Rochdale, Scotland Caps.
Well, Scotland Caps?
I don't know, I made that up actually. No. Is it Scotland? No. I don't know.
Caps. Strachan.
Is that it? Have we done it, please?
Right, no. Give you a fourth and I give away fifth.
Yeah, fourth, please.
Fourth. Over 5 years at Celtic, I made 66 appearances with 9 goals.
And clue number 5.
No.
No.
I was once sick at Barrowfield.
Sick at Barrowfield? That could be anybody.
Training. When he first came to Celtic, he was sick at Barrowfield. Aye.
Come
on. Oh, okay.
My failure, you must have
been. You're taking that.
Jeez,
oh. Oh, brilliant.
Okay, that'll be beeped out and we'll reveal the answer in next week's show. We'll also reshare the clues on the socials for anyone who wants to give it a go there. Remember, if you want to set the mystery celt for a future episode, just get in touch via Twitter and you could be the one providing the clues next time around. To close, you're right, Matt?
Oh, what's that?
You don't get a point for that.
No, I know, but I just love the fact.
To close out the show, we're going to revisit a topic we touched on earlier on. So today, 4th of March 2024, marks 30 years to the day since Fergus McCann took over at Celtic. I've had some initial thoughts from Miff, James, but what was your own feelings at the time? What age were you?
17.
What was the vibe around Celtic early 90s?
It was just grim. It went from, it's interesting, I caught just the start of yourself and Mark McGlone there in the car on the way over, and it was grim, 92, 93, but you could tell there was a bit of a groundswell starting to build. Not the View was my go-to fanzine, you know, that's where you got your, you know, stop reading the Pravda stuff you get from the board. Let's, you know, see what's really there. And, you know, Matt McGlone's once a Tim, always a Tim, was doing the exact same thing. And you were starting to get snippets here and there that, you know, something's building. You were hearing this guy Dempsey, you're hearing this guy McCann, what are they all about? And McGlone makes a really good point. There's no internet, so you're just relying on snippets here and there. But you could tell, you know, there was something coming together, and McCann was obviously working really hard in the background to get a deal over the line. It was, how it felt was just, It's always going to be this way, and we're always going to be guff. But what a feeling when it happened. I remember a guy, Paul Murphy was a guy, it was a year above me at school, I think, and he seemed to be always in the front row at Parkhead when there was a bit of an announcement to be there. So hope he's still kicking about and going to games and stuff. But it was just, I remember watching it with dad in the news, like STV News, I think it was, and it was just an amazing feeling because you knew they were the problem, the board. And you knew they were going somewhere. No matter what was coming in, it had to be better. And, you know, look at the 30 years since.
Yeah, and the kind of historic moment, the big quote that we'll all be familiar with is Brian Dempsey alongside Fergus McCann on the steps of Celtic Park. The game is over. The Rebels have won. Big roar and the rest is history kind of thing. Paddy, youngest of the crew here. Mm-hmm. Any memories or any anything going on of that time, or is this something you just learned about in history class?
No, they don't take me to teach that at school. No chance. I just remember my brothers and my dad around it. I think probably learned a bit more when I got a bit older. I remember the time, obviously, kind of being in Hampden quite a bit as well when Celtic Park was being developed, and they were just saying, look, this is a big step for this team. And I think a lot of fans were in a bit of shock that it was actually, there was change around the corner, which seemed to be short-lived when McCann was just like, aye, all right, I'm doing this for you, but I'm quite a shrewd businessman and I'm going to make sure that we don't go crazy here. We might not catch up, we might not be winning league titles, but I'm building a foundation, and that he did. Just a legend for what he's done for this football club. And yeah, like you say, the last 30 years have been pretty special. I like to think I've had something to do with it. I really do. Just,
you have?
Aye. I think. just for, you know.
Glad he's here now.
It's been the golden era. It's been
just by being born.
Just by being born, exactly.
We've been really successful during your life.
100%.
I thought I'd miss Herdy. I went, no, I didn't.
No. I'm putting it down to me. So I'll be looking forward to an interview as well. You know.
We'll see if we can get a statue special in the Celtic Way, Paddy.
It should be there already.
In terms of Fergus McCann, though, he was at times quite a maligned figure. He'd famously get booed when he raised the flag, and that's a horrible scene to watch.
The media were a big part I think that wouldn't happen in the internet age.
The papers stirred up a frenzy and almost encouraged the booing. It was disgraceful because Fergus McCann came in with a plan. He said what he was going to do, and he done it to the letter, and he left after 5 years, and he sold his shares back in, and that was it. He was the only guy who ponied up when money was required. There's various guys that played a part. You know, spoke to Matt McGlone, and Matt was pivotal along with the various other guys on Celts for Change and Save Our Celts before that. All these guys, without these guys, I don't think it would have happened. But ultimately, you need the money, man. And Fergus McCann, on a bump, he'd been trying to get into Celtic since 1988. Yeah. He'd come and spoken to Chris White and various directors, and they all gave him short shrift.
They offered him like a no strings loan for something to, I think it's for the stadium actually. And they knocked it back.
The chat is, so pre-Taylor report, which came in 1994 and dictated that everyone had to have all-seater stadiums on the back of the high school disaster in Hillsborough and things like that. He came in late 80s and proposed that Celtic could increase their standing capacity and their seating and earn X hundreds of thousands per game revenue, something like that. And I think they just nodded along, gave him his tea and biscuits and said, like, okay, it was such a closed shop. That was the whole thing, James, wasn't it? The dynasties, the families, the Whites, the Kellys, the Grants and stuff like that. But he done what he said he would do him if. There's obviously situations where I think he quite famously didn't quite see eye to eye with Tommy Burns, for example. Tommy Burns just wanted to be successful on the pitch and he needed money and funds to do that. Fergus was pretty tight in terms of spend and all that kind of stuff. So that was always going to be a clash. But ultimately, you've got to credit the guy with, without being too dramatic, he saved Celtic. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely, and would be a rightful beneficiary of a statue outside 100%. Celtic Park because...
Put it next to Paddy's.
Absolutely. He gave us hope at a time when we were absolutely hopeless. McCarry was manager. I think we'd signed Ua Willie Falconer for about $300,000.
Yeah.
And when he arrived, McCarry said, well, he's not got to set the heather alight, but he'll do, type thing. That was the mentality of the club at the time.
The expectations.
Remarkably, we went to Ibrox and beat Rangers when that was the kind of all-conquering Rangers team. We beat them 2-1, Brian, and he'll score in the last minute. And the first game, I think, we actually got beat at home off Motherwell. There was a crowd after the takeover. There was a crowd, a bumper crowd, because when you'd been getting into the games before that, I used to go into, it was the old Celtic end, and there would be more people outside the stadium than were in. The attendances were down to about 14,000, which was obviously trying to starve the board of cash. But it actually got Celtic so close that there was an administrator in a taxi on their way to Celtic Park before McCann stumped up. That's a fact. Bank of Scotland had called up the debt.
There's a story that we'd probably will never know about the machinations behind Bank of Scotland and Masterton and Rangers and Murray and all that stuff. So they were letting
that's how a receiver, as it was called back in the day. You don't really get receiverships anymore, it's general administrations and liquidations. But there was a receiver in the taxi on their way to Celtic Park before McCann had agreed, yes, I will pay and clear the debts. The next game was a home game to Motherwell and they get beat 1-0. So this kind of, you were like, oh, this is great. All of a sudden, we've got players. So the reality was that the squad was so bereft of quality by that point. There'd been so much wheeling and dealing getting done. It was right, this is kind of day one. We just need to build up for here. But what a journey it's been.
There's loads of interesting stories that have come out. So Matt McGlone's episode is live at the moment. And David Lowe, I spoke to him this morning, and that'll be live probably tomorrow. David Lowe's more at the financial side, whereas Matt is more of the just gathering the fan support side. But there's loads of different stories and anecdotes and things doing the round. One interesting one, so actually the first game after the takeover was an away game at St Johnstone. So maybe the first home game is one you refer to against Motherwell. I think we beat St Johnstone 1-0. John Collins, I believe, just from recent research, not from memory. And one of the kind of key factors in the whole thing, so Matt McGlone and the Celts for Change guys, their trump card was always going to be a boycott. But Celts for Change started doing their thing, I think, around about the September, October, but they didn't have enough support and the fans didn't have enough knowledge or trust of them to go all in on it. But they kind of attended various meetings and gathered all that support to the point where I think the game was on the 2nd of March, a midweek game against Kilmarnock, and they called for the big boycott. It was actually meant to be at the weekend and it got snowed off, so you're thinking this isn't going to happen, but they arranged the boycott for the 2nd of March. Now, Celtic are famous, or were famous over the years, for massaging their figures. You know, everyone could see there was 15,000 in.
Allegedly.
And they would play all sorts of numbers for tax reasons or whatever they were doing. Allegedly.
You're the lawyers in here, man.
Sorry. Well. So that was a chat. And basically,
tell the truth, but allegedly,
Celtic had to get at least 10,000 through the gate to make it worth their while, to at least break even and make a couple of quid. And on that night of the boycott, the guys at Celtics for Change, including Matt and others, they arranged independent market researchers to surround the stadium with clickers at every turnstile and take note of all the fans that went in. After the game, Celtic released their figures and declared something like 12,500, something like that. Matt gets the details from the market research company, 8,000, of which something like 1,900 were Kilmarnock fans. So actually, around about 6,000 Celtic fans. And that set the alarm bells ringing at the bank, which led them to make the call. Celtic had 40 hours to deposit £1 million. Fergus McCann's the guy that does that at 11:52 a.m. before the 12 o'clock deadline on the 4th of March. A lot of detail there.
With no security. McCann, no security.
Aye.
Just pointing up though.
Just rolling up. Yeah. So there's lots of good stories. I say, Matt tells it from a fan point of view, David Lowe tells it from a financial point of view, and the other key figures that we speak to in the weeks ahead. So it's really interesting. It's definitely one for tuning into. But yeah, just your final thoughts on it, James. A strange time in our history, but... Well, to Matt's point, actually, should Fergus McCann be more formally honoured at Celtic Park, whether it be statue or naming of the North Stand, for example?
For me, he absolutely should. I wonder if he himself is not so keen on it. I don't know if he's that kind of, you know, kind of person. He's never been one for big limelight and stuff. I know he's advancing in years and whatever, but yeah, I think there should certainly be some, you know, did, you know, administrators essentially get statues? I don't know. The North Stand, why not?
Nobody else is naming it.
Yeah.
I think it would be a fitting tribute. And it's strange when people are still living. So we'll see. But he I think he's earned our eternal thanks. You know, allowing Paddy to go and be so successful in the last 30 years.
Listen, he can get the trophy before me. I can wait. One of my favourite things, I think I've brought it up in the show before, was the chewing the fat. Only an Excuse episode, not too long after his takeover. And it was Tommy Burns coming to see him about signing a player. And he knocks the door and he's like, come in. And he says, oh, I can't. And he says, oh, you need to put a pound. In the door. He comes in. He's like, can I have a seat? He's like, yeah, that'll be a pound as well. Can I have a glass of water? Ah, of course you can. How much is that? That's free. It's free. That'll be a pound. He's like, you said the water was free. A pound for the glass hire. Absolutely brilliant.
In a similar vein, when he was packing up his wee Xerox box and Only Excuse for doing the sketch, so I'm leaving Celtic Park saying 5 successful years and blah, 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 blah. I think that's everything in the box. I went, what? Light bulb.
And it's funny, you know, the perceptions during those times were what the papers told you. Yeah. You know, that was a thing. And yeah, you could say he was frugal, he was careful with money, but he also ponied up £1 million when it counted, and I think £4 million 5 days later. So he's the man who put his money up when some others weren't able to. So that's the battle to save Celtic. It's available now on YouTube and podcast. First episode with Matt McGlone, second with David Lowe in the days to come. James, welcome back after a couple of weeks break. Your final comments for this week.
As Brendan says, this is when the fun starts, you know. I mean, it'd be more fun if we'd won yesterday, but you're at the business end of the season, which is what we're all football supporters and Celtic supporters for. You know, they could do without the Scottish Cup break, rather get back into the league, but we're in a really good position here. You know, Scottish Cup, as Paddy referenced earlier on, that gives you a bit of momentum as well, gets that back. I think that's the frustrating thing yesterday, is it breaks your momentum that was definitely building, and then you're into the running proper. So yeah, looking forward to it all.
Yeah, Paddy, as James mentioned, so it's Livy on Sunday in the Scottish Cup at Celtic Park. So any kind of general thoughts on that and your thoughts for the week?
Yeah, again, I just think the players will want to kick on. I think I'm upset to lose Yang through suspension. I think
maybe.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
I don't think they can justify that sending off.
Nothing would surprise me.
There's
James.
Always a way.
That's why the lawyers will be there.
But I think, you know, just as he's starting to find his feet in Scottish football and playing a pivotal part to the goals that we're creating, you know, seven goals in two games, massive part of that. And I think it's, you want all your best players on the park. You want those with confidence on the park. But, you know, the opportunities that some players are getting that have maybe just been frozen out a little bit, and they're actually seeing the rally call from a lot of the senior players, our captain included, is maybe just giving everyone this final push. Right, let's see what it is to wear a Celtic jersey. Let's see what it is to go and win a league title. It's exciting for me. It is exciting. It's really nice to see. And it's, I think that we should be light years ahead this season. We should be far in advance in terms of our points. But we're here where we are, and you know, it's up to us to just go and make sure we go over the finish line.
Nicholas Kuhn time to shine, is that what you're saying? Is that what I'm hearing there?
I hope so. I hope so. Why not?
Why not indeed? My last word of the week goes to yourself. And maybe I mentioned for Daniel Kelly, Celtic debut goal.
Fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And like James says, it's just a shame that the circumstances went against us at Tynecastle because there was momentum building. Daniel Kelly certainly looks the part in terms of his physical build as well. He's a really imposing sort of figure. Still got a lot of development to do, but here's hoping that he's got his feature in the running. The hope is that the team just kind of dust themselves down because of the circumstances around the defeat, playing so long with 10 men. It's not really like it's a drop in form, a loss in form. Circumstances have went against us. Possibly even say that sort of siege mentality that Paddy was alluding to earlier in the episode is something that Rodgers will really be hammering home. But I think most of the players appear to be in form, which is crucial coming into this run-in. And so unexpected was the result at Ibrox in the Saturday. Is that maybe... That seems to have been glossed over because Celtic have lost, but Rangers don't really have any excuses for that defeat. And is that maybe a sign that pressure is really beginning to now affect them? That's the intriguing part for me. My hope is Scottish Cup at home, get back on the winning thread, regain that momentum, and then let's see where it takes us.
You know, part of my... I wasn't too disappointed after the result of Tynecastle, mostly because I'd seen bits of the Rangers game. Yeah. And I say that very sincerely. I'm not worried. If Celtic get Celtic in order, if we get our house in order, James, I'm pretty confident. Listen, we know it's all there for the taking. We spoke about 13 cup finals. Slash that. Mm. It's now 9, right? So it's 9 cup finals. But I think Celtic are more than capable of getting over the line here.
They were two completely different defeats between Saturday and Sunday. Rangers got out of jail against Kilmarnock. She had a man sent off in the first half when they were one down. They got out of jail. They were woeful against Motherwell. And, you know, Motherwell played well against us as well the week before, you have to remember. But going away to win at Ibrox in the first time in years, Rangers were so, so average. We'd been playing well. And the only reason we lost yesterday, or we can't tell how the game would have panned out, but I think we'd have been pretty comfy, is because of refereeing decisions. That's two completely different things. And Rodgers looking in that dressing room after the game and said, he stole that off you. Go and show them what you can do. That he's using that to get them going.
Yeah, and a good point to finish on. So that wraps things up on this latest episode of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. Thanks to Miff, Paddy and James for joining me, and thanks to you for tuning in. Don't forget the additional episodes we'll be bringing you across this week, including the Battle to Save Celtic, our CSC stories, as well as our pre and post-match shows for Celtic v Livy. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for supporting the Celtic Exchange, and we'll see you again very soon. Network.